Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. You can watch today's program by going to Ustream, that's the letter U, S-T-R-E-A-M, .tv, and searching for Gary Null. And we have tens of thousands of people listening every week over the telephone. We have them in Canada, out driving, in a cab, traveling. The number to call is 712-432-7231, 712-432-7231. Today, that tea that you've been drinking and that people have consumed for hundreds of years, according to the latest research, it can be really good for lowering your cholesterol. In fact, so good, it could actually compete and outdo statins. I've contended that the majority of cases of ADHD in children are not real. Well, according to a report in The Observer, children's hyperactivity, quote, is not a real disease, say experts. All right. What are the health consequences of consuming quinoa, the grain? And how about some strawberries and your heart? That and many more issues on our health segment. I'm going to spend a lot of time today on the latest on environmental issues. If you're looking, this is today's New York Times front page headlines. Panel warning of climate risk. Worse is to come. Effects already felt. UN group cites threat to global food and water supplies. They are not revealing everything of how bad it will be. I will. I'm going to talk about what it means when we have food and water wars. And do I believe we're going to have water wars? Yes. Let me put this prediction out there. I believe that within the next 5 years, we will see people no longer able to sustain a quality of life in over 1,000 towns and communities in the United States. I believe that the water will be hoarded by the major cities, especially in places like Phoenix and Los Angeles and Reno and Dallas. But I also believe that in time, those cities will have to deconstruct their current models. When you don't have enough water, it doesn't matter how much you've spent on your infrastructure for your existing cities. You could have a $100 million apartment, the most expensive apartment in the world, but if you can't get water to it, then it's worth nothing. That's what we're going to see. From Robert and Jack Hunsinger from Counterpunch, Food and Water Wars. Also, if time permits, climate crisis limits to adaptation by countercurrents. And what this means is the average person is doing nothing whatsoever about their impact upon the environment. Now, I'm not referring to the people who are conscientious and make positive changes every day. They'll take their own bag to the market so they don't have to use plastic. They will try to filter their water, or they'll buy organic produce. They really are conscious, and it does make a difference. But compared to those nations like China and the United States and Germany and India and Brazil that are at the forefront of pollution, that are doing nothing, they'll talk a good game, but they're doing nothing. So on the one hand, we are millions who are doing something, and they are billions who are not, and they're the polluters. What does this mean? It means there's going to come a day when we will be watching Katrina everywhere we look, meaning we will no longer be able to get out of harm's way if you're the average person. Not so if you're not. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin, and if time permits, I'm going to continue with my hope is to motivate people to come to a higher state of consciousness in the choices they make and realize that they can live a longer and healthier and happier life if they choose, but only if time permits. This is from the Daily Mail reporter, quote, "A cup of Earl Grey tea can lower cholesterol and reduce the chances of heart disease." And it goes on to talk about the bergamot is a Mediterranean citrus fruit which gives Earl Grey the distinct taste and smell that has traditionally made it popular with the middle classes. Now, new research claims it contains enzymes known as hydroxymethylglutaryl flavonones, which can treat heart disease as effectively as statins. Researchers from Italy's University of Calabria published in the Journal of Functional Foods and shows this is the case. It can reduce the bad cholesterol, and that is without any of the harmful side effects of statins. So that's the latest on this. So your bergamot, which has been used, by the way, in folk medicine in the Mediterranean to protect the heart, treat wounds, turn off inflammation, as a natural antiseptic, it was shown to be the item. Children's high hyperactivity. I believe that some children are born brain damaged. I believe that others are born hypersensitive to environmental toxins, but then are exposed to toxins, whether they're vaccines and adjuvants such as aluminum and vaccines, or the environment they live in, or what they're fed. And then that tips them. So where a normal child might be able to bear the burden of that environmental toxicity, they can't. And as a result, they end up with some form of learning disability, frequently not noticed by most people. But it's there. But the vast majority of people diagnosed with hyperactivity and ADHD don't really have it, and therefore being misdiagnosed, mistreated. Let me just give you one example of this. 5 years ago, I put the word out to this audience that I would be doing a health support group specifically and exclusively for children diagnosed with ADD and ADHD. It lasted for 6 months. It was all about the lifestyle modification. We saw enormous improvement in children's behavior. One of the children involved in that was a 14-year-old young guy, and I asked him, how many meds are you on? He was on 3 different meds. He was skinny as a rail, and he couldn't sleep at night. And he couldn't focus. He was agitated. He was angry. He was very rebellious. But then I asked him a simple question. Do you have any school teachers that you like, whose class you enjoy being in? He said, yes. How many? He said, 3. I said, what were they? And he told me. I said, why do you like the class? Why do you like being there? And he explained it. It was interesting. It stimulated him. And then which classes don't you like and why? Sometimes it was because he was bored. He said he knew more than what was being taught, and he was just disinterested, and his mind would just wander. I said, when you get out of class in the daytime, does your life change? Yeah. I said, so do you engage in after-school activities? He said, yes. Ones you choose? He said, yes. I said, and do you find yourself acting out there? He said, no. So I asked the parents. I said, how is he at home? He's normal at home. But he's not normal in school. No. Did you go to speak with each of his teachers? No. You spoke with the teacher that said that he was suffering from ADHD and had to be on meds? Yes. Don't you think you should speak to the teachers? He said he liked the class. Never thought of it. They did. Turns out he was normal in their classes. So the issue was not, did he have a brain chemical imbalance? The issue was that there were things in life that excited him and drew his attention, and he was normal. And I said to the parents 2 weeks later, I said, you realize that you cannot have a brain chemical imbalance that is specific. If you have a brain chemical imbalance, it's imbalanced 24/7, every day, no matter where you're at, you're going to manifest it. You can't suddenly have brain chemical imbalance in a class you don't like, but you're normal in a class you do. You're not normal in school, but you're normal after school. There's no law of physics, science, or molecular biology would allow that to be true. It's like, and I remember using the example, it would be like having advanced lung cancer. You can't have stage 4 lung cancer on Monday, no cancer on Tuesday, stage 4 on Wednesday, no on Thursday. You either have it or you don't have it, and it can be measured. There's an objective lesson here. Then you start to see that parents kind of going, I see. I didn't realize this. And we do this all the time in different aspects of our lives. So it is my contention that ADHD has been misdiagnosed, mistreated in the vast majority of cases. First and foremost, it's very hard today for teachers, even good teachers, to compete with the stimulation that a child receives on social media and outside the classroom. Secondly, we have disengaged the significance of the teacher in the student's life from what it was when you and I were growing up and our parents and grandparents on down. The teacher was very important to us and would help guide us and shape us and to allow us to be critical thinkers. Today, the teacher is not made significant. The teaching comes instead from a mechanistic approach. It comes from solutions being found from categories on the internet. So the internet has replaced critical thinking. We don't read full books. We don't have discussions of them. Instead, we're given encapsulated views. All of that means then that the teacher is merely a technician to facilitate the student in this assembly line of education. Now, having been a school teacher, and I am a teacher for decades, this is something that's very intimate to me, something I work with on a regular basis. The more interesting I make a class, the more likely it is the students will want to learn and ask questions and challenge and be looking forward to coming back the following week. But that's true of this radio program. I'm constantly looking at ways that I can make this more challenging. Health and nutrition, environmental issues, social issues, interesting guests, conversations with remarkable minds, original investigative reporting, all of which you're going to hear tomorrow. You hear original investigative reporting. A new in-depth investigation has taken over 6 months called Manufacturing Madness. The next day, a very important original article that I'm publishing and that I'm broadcasting also on preventing and reversing breast cancer naturally. But we have to constantly be aware that an audience is no different in many cases than students. And how often do you hear programs where just they're boring? They don't challenge. They're using the same formula over and over and over again. And as a result, the audiences shrink or become disinterested. Now put yourself in being much younger, far less disciplined, and no longer seeing the educational system or the teachers as vital. And therefore, you don't take them as seriously. Now, on top of that, put in some junk food. Start the day getting up where you have not had a good night's sleep. Your immune system is challenged. Have some caffeine and sugar, both of which are extremely dangerous. And then try to sit still and focus. Then you start going through hypoglycemic. Your blood sugar spikes. You're hyper. It wanes. You're fatigued. So what's being said in class becomes secondary to making yourself feel good and waiting to the break so you can have another snack. And so the roller coaster begins. We do have some small number of teachers that actually try to encourage their students not to sleep with their cell phones beside their head because of electromagnetic pulses that disrupt melatonin from being secreted from the pineal gland, that it will reduce the risk of brain and jaw and eye cancers, and to get a good night's sleep. The world will not end for you because you actually go to bed before you've twittered out for the 10,000th time that day. You know, it'll be there in the morning. So that sleep's important. Starting your day with a healthy smoothie, that's important. Being able to communicate with your parents about which classes you like and don't like, and then discuss that with your teachers as well. Being able to see how you can stay focused so that you're not victimized by the system. Here's what they say. This is from Dr. Bruce Perry. Said that the label of ADHD outlined a broad set of symptoms. Quote, it is best thought of as a description. If you look at how you end up with the label, it is remarkable because any one of us at any time would fit at least a couple of those criteria. Prescriptions for methamphetamines such as Ritalin, which are used to treat children diagnosed with ADHD, have gone up 56% in the recent past. And such psychostimulants are thought to stimulate a part of the brain that changes mental and behavioral reactions. However, Dr. Perry, a senior fellow of Child Trauma Academy in Houston, Texas, said he was concerned that children are being labeled as having ADHD when they merely described the symptoms of a range of different physiological problems. The symptoms that lead to a diagnosis of ADHD include inattentiveness, hyperactivity, impulsiveness over a sustained period. Perry added that clinicians were also too readily prescribing psychostimulants to children when the evidence suggests that there was no long-term benefits. Animal studies have raised concerns over the potential of damaging the children. So, what we have is we have normal behavior being pathologized, and that is all to sell drugs. A lot of people have switched off of wheat to quinoa, and that's a good thing, especially if you had the red quinoa. Here's the latest on quinoa and other ancient grains such as amaranth and barley and farro, F-A-R-R-O, which are becoming very popular. Now, the ancient grains are referred to as such because they have remained largely unchanged for hundreds or even thousands of years. Quinoa, for example, was known to the Incas as the mother of all grains and was first cultivated over 5,000 years ago. And although there are hundreds of cultivated types of quinoa, the most common versions available are white, red, and black quinoa. And then they did a complete nutritional analytical breakdown and found out what's in them and why are they important to us and why we should not have the refined pastas and the refined rice and the refined breads, but rather have the whole grain, because they contain essential vitamins and minerals and fiber to regulate our digestive system and also creating satiety. And it's gluten-free. It has iron, B vitamins, magnesium, phosphorus, potassium, calcium, vitamin E. It is also a plant that is considered a complete protein, meaning you're getting all of your essential amino acids. And it also has healthy fatty acids. In fact, about 25% of quinoa's fatty acids come in the form of oleic acid, which is a heart-healthy monounsaturated fat. And all that is good. So it doesn't have a lot of calories. And we know that by having 2 to 3 servings of whole grain per day, we can reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, colon cancer, and obesity. So you're getting a lot of good from having a simple little grain. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. Now we shift to our environmental group. I read you the title front page of the New York Times today about the panel's warning on climate change worsens to come. But here's what they don't tell you. They don't tell you what you can do about it or should do about it, how you can prepare yourself, which is would be reasonable, because not everyone is going to prepare. Most people will not. Even the people that read the New York Times won't change. Nor will the average person even seeing the impact of boiling hot weather. If you think the people living in Phoenix need a wake-up call, wait till this summer when the weather will hit 135 degrees on some days, we're going outside could create a heat stroke. Yet they won't move. So, here's how bad it's going to be, and then I'll show what we can do about it. This is by Matt McGarth, the BBC News science and environmental reporter. Quote, the impacts of global warming are likely to be, quote, severe, pervasive, and irreversible. Scientists and official meeting in Japan stated the most comprehensive assessment ever on the impact of climate change in the world. We're going to have worse flooding. We're going to have water shortages everywhere. And the natural systems are currently bearing the brunt of climate change, but a growing impact on humans is feared. Our health, homes, food, and safety are all likely to be threatened by rising temperatures. That's him. Okay. Then we go to this report. This is from Robert and Zach Hunziker from Counterpunch. It's entitled Food and Water Wars. It will be posted today. And by the way, for those of you who are not aware of it, every day we post upwards of 70 to 80 articles on progressive themes. Now, you did not hear me talking about current topical issues. I don't talk, didn't do a program on the missing airliner or the Ukraine, a lot of these issues, because they're being done by other sources. And I believe they're overdone, even without proper analytical insight. I try to select those that are more likely to impact the rest of us. And you can go to progressiveradionetwork.com to our page and you can read these. By the way, just to give you an idea, last week, just the last 6 days, 2.2 million impressions across the media. Let's see, 729,609 views of our most recent documentary, 8,281,097 minutes watched on our Progressive Radio Network YouTube channel. So you can see that an awful lot of people, even on Facebook and Twitter, 17,000 were collecting and sharing information. So there is a source other than the Huffington Post or The Nation that's not left, it's not right, it's not conservative, it's not liberal. It's simply looking for the truth without needing to wrap it in an ideology. The warming of the Arctic, quote, could become one of the greatest catastrophes in human history, even exceeding the notoriety of Adolf Hitler and Genghis Khan. Likely it will impact more people than the combined efforts of those two brutal leaders. In fact, global warming may eventually be categorized as the greatest threat of all times, even greater than the Black Death. Between 75 and 200 million people died around 1350. How? The integrity of the Arctic ice sheet is essentially there to prevent the risks, methane outbreak, and fierce damaging weather throughout the northern hemisphere. Regrettably, the Arctic ice sheet area registered a seasonal record low on March 10, 2014 at 12 million square kilometers, whereas maximum ice growth is usually expected in March, not all-time seasonal lows immediately preceding the onset of summer. And this is from the National Snow and Ice Data in Boulder, Colorado. We've had many extreme weather events. As a consequence of the warming Arctic, we will likely wreak havoc over the entire northern hemisphere, causing severe droughts, freezing cold spells, and widespread flooding. Some of this is already at hand. Now, these combinations of extreme weather events have the potential to rival the damage of the great mythical floods. Already, Eastern Europe had a taste of extreme weather change in 2013 when a once-in-500-year flood hit hard, wiping out vast swaths of cropland. In the future, when shortages of food and water become more commonplace because of extreme climatic change, it is probable that desperate groups of roughnecks will battle for food and water, similar to the dystopia depicted in Mad Max, the story of a breakdown of society where bandits battle over the last remaining droplets of petroleum. Over time, climate change is setting the stage for worldwide wars over food and water. Let's go deeper. Research conducted by Jennifer Francis, PhD, Rutgers University, Institute of Marine and Coastal Sciences, shows that Arctic sea ice loss, with its consequent warming, impacts upper-level atmospheric circulation, radically distorting jet streams above 30,000 feet, which adversely affects weather patterns throughout the northern hemisphere. Now, quote, gradual warming of the globe may not be noticed by most, but everyone, directly or indirectly, will be affected to some degree by changes in the frequency and intensity of extreme weather events as greenhouse gases continue to accumulate in the atmosphere. That's from Dr. Francis. Scientists are already cognizant of how badly a warming Arctic impacts subsistence. For example, according to the Arctic Methane Emergency Group, quote, the weather extremes are causing real problems for farmers. World food production can be expected to decline, with mass starvation inevitable. The price of food will rise beyond most people's measure to afford it, producing global unrest and making food security even more of an issue. End quote. Quote, the nexus between climate change, human migration, and instability continues, a transcendent challenge. The conjunction of these undercurrents was most recently visible during the Arab Spring, where food availability, increasing food prices, drought, poor access to water, as well as urbanization and international migration contributed to the pressures that underpinned the political upheaval. And that's from Michael Wirtz, Max Hoffman, Climate Change, Migration, and Conflict, the Arab Spring. And that was from the Climate and Security Collaboration series. As, for example, Syria suffered from devastating droughts in the decade leading up to its rebellion, as the country's total water resources cut in half between 2002 and 2008. As a result, the drier winters hit Syria, which at the time was the top wheat-growing region of the eastern Mediterranean, thereby exacerbating its crisis. In 2009, the UN and the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies reported that more than 800,000 Syrians lost their entire means of livelihood because of drought. And that was one of the reasons for the uprising. In the recent past, ferocious weather conditions have struck all across the planet. For example, a once-in-every-500-year flood in Eastern Europe, a once-in-50-year drought in the U.S. Midwest, the worst droughts in 200 years in China, affecting more than the entire population of North America, the worst flooding in Pakistan in 100 years, and lasting over a month, the most costly flash flood damage in Canada's modern history. Syria's drought has been classified as the worst in the history of the Fertile Crescent, while Brazil is experiencing its worst drought in decades. And it goes on. Merciless weather is lashing out with torrential storms and embedded droughts like never before. No other period of time in modern history comes close. The reason behind the weather dilemma has everything to do with global warming in the Arctic, which is warming 300% faster than elsewhere on the planet. In turn, the Arctic, which serves as a thermostat for the entire northern hemisphere, is disrupting the jet streams, which as a result influences weather patterns throughout the hemisphere, causing droughts and torrential storms to become embedded or stalled for long duration. Colorado's torrential downpour and massive flooding last year, which was as fierce as superabundant coastal tropical storms, but not at all like mid-latitude middle America storms. As a result, when I visited Colorado to do a special on PBS Channel 12, the driver said, I'm going to take you a different route because there were 22,000 homes wiped out in a flood of mud and water that was 20 feet high that came roaring down the canyons and for miles across. And he said, we've never had anything like this in Colorado history. People thought that where they were at was safe because we had never had a problem. Well, until you have a problem. Once food and water shortages become widespread as a result of more extreme and unpredictable climate behavior, it is highly probable that people across the planet will become so disgusted and distraught that they'll be looking to pay back. In that regard, history shows that during such times, desperation overrides prudence. Therefore, hiding behind security gates and armed troops won't make a difference. Similar to the late 18th century French Revolution, when masses of citizens used pitchforks, stones, and sticks to overwhelm the king's formidable armed forces. At the time, France was one of the mightiest forces in the world, but like Tory soldiers, its army fell at the hands of its own citizens. In the end, civilizations cannot and have not survived the force of desperation borne by starvation. In the case of Paris, 2 years of poor grain harvest because of bad weather conditions set the stage for revolution. On June 21, 1791, the king, queen, and their attendants fled their Paris residences, whisked away in carriages as masses of enraged, starving protesters swarmed the city streets. The forewarnings had been there for years beforehand. On August 20, 1986, the French minister, the finance minister, Coligny, informed King Louis XVI that the royal finances were insolvent because of costly foreign wars like the U.S. today. Hard times hit. 6 months later, the first assembly of notables met, resisting imposition of taxes and fiscal reforms. And it was nearly 3 years later, April 27, 1789, when the riots in Paris occurred, caused by low wages, like the U.S. today. Think of Walmart, think of McDonald's, food shortages, not yet in the U.S., but coming, led to deaths by troops. Thereafter, the public's anger grew to a fever pitch, and on July the 14th, rioters stormed the most notorious jail for political prisoners in all of France, the Bastille. And on July 17th, the Great Fear had begun to take in command of the streets as the peasantry revolted against their socio-economic system. One of their prime targets was Queen Marie Antoinette, and considered with the world's most powerful monarchy, whose last spoken words were delivered to Henry Sanson, her executioner, as she accidentally stepped on his foot upon climbing the steps of the scaffold. "Monsieur, I ask your pardon. I did not do it on purpose." And then she lost her head in front of tens of thousands of cheering Parisians. Well, flash forward in time into the future and imagine the backlash in the country if food shortages hit America because of the failure of the government to set policies to convert fossil fuels to renewable energy sources. As such, U.S. could have led the entire world to conversion to renewable sources of energy. As things stand, we haven't. In stark contrast to America's reluctance, Scotland's energy sources are almost 40% renewable and will be 100% in just the next 6 years. According to a landmark study entitled "Food Insecurity is Both Cause and Consequence of Political Violence," the Food Insecurity and Conflict, the World Development Report, the link between high grain prices and riots is well established. For example, The Economist magazine showed that when high grain prices sparked riots in 48 countries. And as for a more current situation, the Arab Spring uprisings brought political and economic issues to the forefront, but behind the scenes, climate stress played a big role. According to Marco Lagoff of the New England Complex Systems Institute in Technology and Review at MIT, the single factor that triggers riots around the world is the price of food. The evidence comes from data gathered by the United Nations that plots the price of food against the time of the so-called Food Price Index. And 4 days before the gentleman set himself on fire in Tunisia, sparking the Arab Spring riots, the same group contacted the U.S. government warning that global food prices were about to cross the tipping point when almost anything can cause riots. Accordingly, the study was presented by invitation at the World Economic Forum in Davos and was featured as one of the top 10 discoveries in science that year. Quote, "Definitely, it is one of the causes of the Arab Spring," said the Director General of the International Food Policy Research Institute. But nothing was done about it. As for Syria, it is a prime example of the drama of changing climate conditions, the consequences. The country's farmlands north and east of the Euphrates River constitute the breadbasket of the Middle East. Unfortunately, up to 60% of Syria's land experienced one of the worst droughts in their history. So, as countries like the United States hastily continue their pursuit of policies dedicated to energy independence by hydrofracking, using extreme pressure to force toxic chemicals underground to suck up every last remnant of oil and gas, the warming of the Arctic is elevated, and the jet streams become more distorted, resulting in extremely harsh, deadly, and unpredictable weather systems pummeling the entire northern hemisphere. Eventually, the outcome leads to shortages of food, and like a flashback of the 18th century France, people starve or they fight. End quote. My thoughts. We're very good at electing politicians who are outstanding in making us feel that they know our pain. Think of Bill Clinton. That they are going to make change we can believe in. Think of Obama. That we have resources that we can use to stop the tide of dependency and create renewables. They all say that, but then look at what is done. The money is spent on supporting with subsidies coal, nuclear, and gas and oil. Geothermal, which has 20,000 times the capacity to provide our energy as any other source, is given no money. Wave power, which has been proven to create energy, is given no research except by individuals, and it works. So we're doing the wrong thing at the wrong time, and we will pay a price for it. Do I see that we will change? We will not. We cannot. And the reason we cannot is because we do not any longer have a republic, nor a pseudo-democracy disguised as republic. We no longer have one vote for one citizen. We have a group of 1,400 billionaires who can buy as many votes as they want, and therefore it is their votes that count. They buy elections. And hence the policies of those individuals are the ones that are served. At the state level and now at the local council level, it is ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, representing 300 to 400 major corporations' interest. At the world level, it is trying to ram through the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a completely toxic treaty that would shred the Constitution and shred the Bill of Rights. At the opposite end is the North Atlantic Treaty, which is a virtual carbon copy of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It would allow corporations to sue the United States and win without the ability for repeal, without the ability for change, without the ability to petition for redress. If you're a corporation and you feel that your toxic chemical would have made you $100 million, but some state said we don't want that toxic chemical here, you sue the state, and then three judges who are all lawyers for the multinational corporations then decide you cannot appeal it. It is absolute. There is precedent for this already. It's already happening. Imagine what our country would be like. We would have no clean water, no clean soil. We had no air that we could breathe that would be safe. We would be exploited. Unions would be broken. Massive exploitation of derivatives and exotics, exotic financial instruments on Wall Street. It would just be a rampant destruction of our society. And yet, the corporate Democrats are lining up behind it. And MSNBC, the pathetic excuse they are for anything, except they should just call themselves, we are here to support the president and the Democrats. That's fine. We all know that. Anyone who thinks otherwise is naive or a fool. We already know about Fox. So where do we get our information? We can't trust the New York Times. We can't trust the Washington Post because the political biases and what they choose not to cover. So I'm saying that right now we are going to get hit with nothing but one punishing blow after another from the environment. We are going to get hit with increasing medical costs people will die because we have not put the money into prevention or in more natural treatments, or at least orthodox treatments that work at affordable prices. And we are going to put people into a more punishing position economically. If you thought it was bad up till the last 5 years, the next 5 years will be worse. Because now they have figured out where other than China to build their next outsourcing, which means that even well-paid jobs, jobs that people thought they would always have, they won't have. So only those Americans who have already retired, have their savings, have no debt, have no mortgages, are likely to continue the quality of life. But anyone else? Man, is this the wrong time to be buying houses? You've even been gamed when it comes to the housing market. Stay away from it. The smart players have gone in there. The hedge funds, the equity partnerships, they bought up all these foreclosed homes for pennies on the dollar. And they're then packaging those into exotic packages and selling them out. Or they're saying that there'll be a massive renter's market. Well, none of that's true. So they've artificially created another bubble. Plus there's the phantom real estate bubble, meaning all the homes that have been foreclosed on, they're being kept off the market to artificially keep the price of homes high. If you allowed all the homes in a market that have been foreclosed on to be offered for sale, the market would collapse another 20% in real estate. So it's not the right time to be living the American dream, because it's not your dream. It'll be your nightmare. My suggestion is start now while you have an opportunity and resources to do so, to look for places in the world to live where you can have a quality of life without the fear that extreme weather, shortage of water, or quality land because of drought. There are still abundant places, and there are quality places where communities are, where there's more progressive thinking people, where you still maintain your sense of self and autonomy, but at least you're in a more supportive environment. For those in the Midwest, you're in the wrong place. For those of you who are out West, you're definitely in the wrong place. I don't speak from some armchair perspective. I'm out there traveling. I'm meeting. I'm on the road all the time. I'm filming. My new documentary is on poverty, and it highlights this. If you're in California, really the wrong place. But as long as you can wake up today and you've got beautiful sky, you turn on the faucet, it's got plenty of water, go to the store, abundance of fruits and vegetables, restaurants packed, theaters packed, it's like living on the Upper West Side of New York. It's a real environment to you, but it's in a context that is disassociated with everything else in the world. So, places that I wouldn't want to be when the waters start to rise, when the food becomes short, when you don't have water to drink, when it's rationed, and then watch the conflict. I said it 7 years ago. I said America is going to become two nations. One, a prosperous green zones like Manhattan, where you'll have more people from around the world wanting to be here to enjoy its quality of life, so the real estate market will continue to go up much further than what it is now. But you just go across that river and you're in a different place. You're in Mad Maxville. And that's where people will not have the services, the infrastructure, the support, or the protection of a quality of life. And each day will be a hit or miss. That is when the rule of all breaks down, and those who can exploit a situation of their opportunity will do so, as those in power have already exploited it to the max. Already there are major, major purchases of land in Africa, in South America, in Central America, because these well-to-do people, mainly billionaires, want to be able to control what is grown. They're only into GMOs, but also they want to control the price of food. Now, these are the people that no matter how many people suffer or starve to death, if they control the food that is available, they can control the price of that food, either paid for directly by consumers or subsidized by the government and citizens. Either way, they profit. Now, you would have to speak with these people one-on-one and ask them, what is your motive? You have $1 billion. You have everything. Why would you want to increase the price of food to people who are starving? And then you realize these are psychopaths. These are sociopaths. You will have no conversation with them that will end up enlightening them or having them change. That's who they are, and that's who controls the world at this moment. Unless you decide to empower yourself. My suggestion? Water. You can't grow without water, and you can't live without water. Clean water. Lots of water. Look for properties in the Carolinas. Look for properties in... The trouble with looking for places in the northern latitude is that you're also going to be in the worst winters imaginable. Better to go to southern places that still have water. And you can find maps, hydrology maps, that tell you how much water, its purity, its availability. And I believe that they're going to shut that off also. I have information that there's a major effort now at the state level by those who are speculating in water to prevent people from being able to go into the deeper aquifers so they can be self-sustaining. So they end up controlling the water, and therefore municipalities have to buy the water from these investors. And they can charge whatever they will, and we know what they do when they can charge money. So those are my thoughts on that. I'm Gary Knoll, back in a moment for Commentary on Consciousness. Please stay with us. Listening to the number one listen to progressive radio program in the world. Nice to have you on board. And we will be providing positive insights every single day. Those of you who want to make changes, you'll have the tools. I gave a part of a commentary the other day. I want to share the end of that now. Because I believe that most people are smarter than the choices they make. I believe that we're gripped by fear and insecurity, that we'd like to do something, but gee whiz, if we do and we fail, if we don't really succeed, we can be criticized and judged. And those little voices in the back of our brain say, don't do it. What if you don't do it right? What if you can't do it right? And hence we don't do anything. And then we're watching Katrina in our lives. How many times have we pulled out our energy, pulled it back, when we might have allowed ourselves to flow forward? You can block your own energy or you can let it flow. Everything in life is about a constricting or flowing. Let me give you an example. We look at our bank balance and we see that we're overspent. First thing that we think about is constrict. We start feeling insecure that there's a shortage. We can't buy what we want. We lack abundance, we think, which makes us apprehensive and makes us overreact. We fight with anyone else who may have participated in our overspending. Why did you buy that? You can't afford that. Or people say, I don't have a life anymore. All I'm doing is working to pay my bills. I'm living in New York City. I can't enjoy the city because I have to work so hard. By the time I get home at night, I'm tired. So I hang out with other people who also live in New York City, who are also frustrated by what they cannot afford, and we fetch and complain together. Okay, who put you here? Why don't you look for another place to live? Because instead of opening up, you've closed down. The moment any stimulus from our environment says there is a shortage of money, of love, of respect, of opportunity, we constrict. We get tight in the stomach. You know what I'm talking about? Something isn't right and you feel it in your gut. You get headaches and you get strains in your back and neck. We constrict because we cannot control people or the outcome of events. We get overwhelmed by our circumstances. On top of the circumstances, there are all those voices in our head telling us how we should react and how we should respond. Visualize that you're in a lifeboat. You're in a rough patch of water. You have a paddle, but you can't control the boat because the current's too strong. You force yourself onward because you see an island and you're desperate. Anything at this moment, make the choice that gets you immediately to feel better. But the closer you get to the island, the more apparent it becomes that it's not a lush, beautiful, bountiful paradise. It's a barren little outpost. But you're thinking it's something, it's better than nothing. So you put all your energy into getting there. And while the current is still pulling you away, you jump out of the boat and you start swimming. And now your single purpose is to get to safety. And you do. You get up on the beach. You look around and think, I'm glad I'm out of the water. I'm glad I'm out of the current. Yeah? Where are you? Look around. You're on a barren island. Much like barren relationships and barren jobs and barren environments. Barren political ideologies. It was safe. Required no major thinking. How many times have you chosen a barren job or living environment or friendship because it was better to choose something in the moment from fear and insecurity? At least you didn't have to concern yourself with the current of life. But now the current of life continues to flow. It's going right by you. Every day the current is flowing, and you're a spectator. You're not in it. What would have happened had you gone with the current? Where would the current have taken you? How many times have you gone against the current on your own being? You know what you should do. You know what you were conditioned to do. You know you should be open to the moment, but you're restricted and uptight. You go against your own internal chi, your own natural self. You're fighting it because the conditioned self, the millions of voices in your head from your background, are telling you, play it safe, stay here. And fear will always win if you let into it. Then you're living in a barren little island. For a moment in time, you're protected and secure. But whenever you need to feel secure, it means you're moving from insecurity. And when you do that, you'll never fill the void. You'll always feel empty and remain stuck. But what happens if you let yourself flow instead? Where will the current take you? What if it takes you to a place of beauty and harmony and serenity? What if it takes you to where all your rhythms of life are flowing with the rhythm of life? Then you're going to connect and with like-minded people because similar energies always connect. You harmonize. But we're afraid of who we are. We're afraid of what would happen if we just flow. Take a look at your life and ask yourself, how many times have you ended up on a barren little island? That's what's important. Being free in this moment to make decisions that empower you. If we did that, we wouldn't be buying anything that's toxic. We wouldn't be supporting people who are negative. We would release our energy, intellectual, creative, inspirational, and spiritual, into the positive flow of change. I meet people all the time who say, I'm too old to change. I'm too tired to change. And they are right. And then I meet someone who says, I don't care how old I am. I'm going to change. I was tired yesterday. I was sick yesterday. But today I'm not. I'm going to change. And they're right. Isn't it interesting? At the personal level, we're always right. We just don't like the results of what we're rewarded with. In every human being, there is a dynamic life force. If you keep it controlled and repressed, it won't express itself. Open yourself to express the dynamic energy that uniquely is your own. It has your signature written all over it. When you connect with that exuberance and start to open up, you're like a beautiful unfolding flower. Suddenly you think, wow, this was a wonderful way to feel. I feel free. I'm not making my decisions from fear or limitations or illusion or conditioned self. I'm in the moment. I want to be a part of the flow of my life. I want to present my flow to the world. I don't have to wait until everything is right or someone gives me permission or I have enough money or I'm secure enough. I'm my own support system. Money is not what supports me. Faith in myself supports me. Trusting in that eternal spirit is all that I need. And they, too, are right. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessia. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, I got an email from someone who said, I'm not going to mention the name of the BAI host, but someone said that this person, a well-known BAI host, was overheard having a lively discussion with you in your health food store. And the question this person asked me is, this whole issue with WBAI, they're asking, should any crime committed by the Pacifica staff be held to the same standards as, say, crimes in corporate America? It seems that, based on what you've been saying on the air about this situation, that it appears they've broken laws. In other words, they're not giving information for audits. There's a possibility that they were pirating producers' CDs and DVDs. And they seem to be immune from punishment. And the question is, what is this about?
The person who I had a conversation with was James Irsay, who does a program on Friday. I'm very transparent. I don't have to hide anything. That was not quite the conversation we had. We were discussing some of the changes that had occurred at BAI, including the taking off on a Sunday of a long-time, beautiful radio program on symphonies and on opera, and putting a show in its place that would possibly in time attract a different audience or a larger audience. And we both felt that that was ill-advised. There was also the issue of pirating. There's currently a question, and it's a very important question. And this is where he and I agreed. I believe that any radio station, including BAI, should be held accountable to whatever law all of us would be held accountable to if we were not in that environment. The reason many issues go without the public being aware of them is because the Pacifica Foundation has groomed a image of itself that it wants to keep in people's mind that does not meet the reality of what it's become over the years. For example, I challenged the executive director, Summer Reese, and before her, Arlene Engelhart, and said, why don't you tell the public, why don't you tell your listeners that the number two expense in Pacifica's budget is paying for sexual harassment litigation and settlements by its staff? And this was a major expense. And I felt that I could not in good conscience raise money knowing that people who had engaged in or perpetuated some form of sexual harassment from the management of different radio stations in one time, all five stations, should be supported financially. That was never brought up. It's if it was a secret. Also, allegations of pirating. Now, pirating means that you take someone's CD or DVD, and instead of giving them a royalty or buying it from them, instead you make copies. Therefore, you have zero expenses, and whatever money you got from it is all profit. It will make the station look better, or it could be embezzled by someone if they were so inclined to do so by submitting a false invoice, which is not uncommon in this world in people submitting false invoices and being paid. So if pirating indeed has been uncovered, and there are those who believe it has, then that should be turned over to the Attorney General and then allow those people responsible to be held accountable. Otherwise, let's just say hypothetically that it's true. Then think of all the people who believe in the mission of Pacifica or the station they're on, who've donated their time and energy, who've contributed their premiums, and now they're being ripped off. Would they continue? Would Pacifica or that station or the people involved continue to have a good reputation, be supported by their community? It was known that they had engaged in this gross illegal activity. So until such time that all the people are brought under oath and an official criminal investigation is done, we will never know the truth. Also, there's a federal law that if you ask for a premium, you have to give it or you're in violation of the federal law. This would bankrupt the foundation. Nothing is done about it. That was the conversation we had. We both agreed that it's time that you have responsible management, professional management, professional overseeing of fiduciary responsibility, that what you're engaged in is good programming, good fundraising, good social and civic input. That's what the station should be. But right now there's an identity crisis, it's BAI, and none of the stations know what they want to be. There is no real image there. There's only this illusion of what we once were, and somehow that's what we're supposed to be in the future. We first have to have a knowledge and an insight of what are we? Are we a radio station? What do we want to be? And then who should run it? And should they have the freedom at once elected and selected that they can actually make decisions? Because right now, anyone who is selected for any position in Pacifica, clear up to the executive director, the moment they make a decision that goes against one of the little tiny groups that control so much of Pacifica, there's chanting, there's demonstrations, there's threats against them. And hence there's a fear. If we were to do it over right now, probably 90% of all the programming should be scrapped for better programming. But then again, for who? Who are you programming for? They don't even know who they want their audience to be. And the audience they thought, well, that audience was 1968, and it's long dead or gone. And today you're competing with thousands of other media outlets that are doing good programming without the politics, without the internecine conflicts, and without having to engage in any real or perceived illegalities. There should only be one rule of law, which we're all held accountable for, and one professional standard to which we're all held accountable. We should all act like adults and grown-ups and be there to serve something other than our own ego or interest. Hope that answers your question.
Sure does. Thank you.
I'm Gary Nolde. Say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about election dejection, political change, challenge, and choice.
We look forward to it. And by the way, Utrice, you didn't hear the mention earlier, but you'll probably get an email on it. Our media person here just gave us the statistics. We had 2,200,000 impressions last week on Progressive Radio Network, 729,609 views of our documentaries, 8,281,097 minutes watched on Progressive Radio Network, and social media of over 17,000 Twitters, and that's a whole lot of growth there. So, once again, that's why we're number one in the world on Progressive Radio.
That's great.
Have a nice day.
Thank you, Gary.